Today is Thursday, the 10th of October 2024. And we're in the last quarter of 2024, and a lot of things are happening. Today, I have with me Abdul Majid Awan, our CEO of Augustus Media, Richard Fitzgerald. How are you, Rich?
I'm good, Majid. How are you? Good morning.
Yeah, perfect. Everything is great. Let's jump into the action right away because we have a lot of very big stories with a lot of very big numbers. So first of all, let's talk about Abu Dhabi has surpassed Oslo as the global sovereign wealth fund capital. Abu Dhabi, with its four big sovereign wealth funds in the Emirate, that is the ADIA, Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, there's ADQ, there is Mubadala, and then there's Emirates Investment Authority. All of them combined have given $1.7 trillion valuation to the sovereign wealth funds in Abu Dhabi.
I love this headline.
That's a big number, right?
The capital of capital. You know, someone commented that it was coined a year or two ago, and the capital of capital is a lovely, like, whoever came up with it, I think it's going to stick.
Yeah.
You know, it's got no desert reference, it's just the capital of capital. And it's such a good marketing thing, because if anyone's interested in capital, you know, we hear of the US capital markets and, you know, there's sovereign wealth funds, but the capital of capital is brilliant. And, you know, the newsletter today on Smashy Business really outlines the knock-on effect and how it attracts more staff and more people and more investments.
Yeah.
And, you know, lately you've been covering, Majid, a lot about different offices and different funds that are opening in Abu Dhabi. So there are the hero sovereign wealth funds that you mentioned, but there's also the ecosystem and the environment around that now as well.
But Rich, you're yourself a business owner, and how do you think, as a business owner, how does Abu Dhabi or Dubai's environment help you?
Yeah.
Because you have a company in Dubai, we have an office in Abu Dhabi as well.
You know, I've obviously worked in different markets, but I don't know. I don't know if I compare it, and I don't know if it's good or bad. I just know what's happening.
Yeah.
And I almost don't really care about the other places, you know. But look, like, there's energy in Abu Dhabi. There's energy here. We've seen lots of big IPOs on the ADX. We see lots of investments. We see lots of things happening.
And
I love,
like,
the
in
capital.
In this month
capital
alone, there's like three $3 trillion asset management companies which have arrived in Abu Dhabi, ADGM. So in just a month. So that's not a small number to be like, just to be ignored, like, oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
Everyone is moving away. I recently saw something very interesting. Two or three ministers from the UK are saying that there should be an exit tax for UK nationals, because we always talk about how there's like 6,700 millionaires coming to Dubai. There was a report about it, and those ministers are now talking about it, that everyone is moving their capital to Dubai.
India have it, don't
India
they?
Have it,
India
exactly.
have a. It's, I think it's 20%.
Oh.
But any, even when you relocate someone from India here, if they bring any assets with them, it's taxed. And, you know, the owners of the football club I support in the UK are the Venkis from India, and their funding was curtailed a bit for this reason. So it is a, you know, and, you know, it's a fiscal policy, I guess. It's basically, you know, the US has some taxes on foreign nationals. Like, it's a way, it's the French approach as well. It's a way to keep things within. And it's interesting, the headline, you know, the headline that you referenced was, you know, number of millionaires moved here in the first 6 months of the year. But there's later articles, more recently, about what you're referring to is the exodus from the UK. But yeah, look, I think, you know, I think we can talk about, you know, the UK and an investment, an inward investment. But I think what's happening with these sovereign wealth funds, and it is a nice segue to the next story, but what's happening with these sovereign wealth funds is the $1.7 trillion in assets on the SWFs that you mentioned, Majid, the, you know, ADIA, ADQ, and then Emirates Investment Authority. You know, Mubadala, ADIO as well. Like, there's different entities down in Abu Dhabi, and there a lot of them are listed. A lot of them have parts of their entities that are listed, but a lot of them have investments abroad. So these assets, you know, if you dig deeper of where the assets are split, it's quite diversified.
Taking that into account, that these big wealth management firms, they're also investing outside. Let's move on to the next story, which is that Saudi PIF which is Saudi Arabia's biggest fund. It's the public investment fund that has acquired a 40% stake in Selfridges. It is a very high-end market, and it's like an icon on the Oxford Street in London, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I've never been there,
store.
So yeah.
It's that yellow logo, and it's it's like Harvey Nicks, or it's like, you know, Harrods. It's institutional in the UK. I was surprised with the number that we reported that they have 18 stores across the UK, Netherlands, and Ireland. It's expanded a lot since my time there. But look, another one, 40%. And you had the details of this. So there was two owners, 160 and 140, and they bought one of the owners out, which was they joined Central Group, who are the Hong Kong based
Senior Group. Signia Group.
The ones they bought out.
They were facing a lot of problems with their funding and their funds, their cash flow.
It says the collapse of Signia Group. Yeah. Do we know anything more about that?
No idea, but I just remember that they were bought, Selfridges was bought by these two groups,
Signia and Central.
Central and Signia in 2021.
Yeah.
And it was nearly a $4 billion or $3 billion investment. They bought it, but then Saudi PF invested 10% into it, and eventually at the time, and now they've raised it more, 30%. They bought the remaining 30% from.
Do we know what number they bought the other 30% of? Is it more or less than the few billion a few years ago?
The evaluation was nowhere. The numbers were not disclosed, so that was the tricky part finding it. But soon enough, someone will report those numbers, and we will know that how much money they've invested.
And the PIF do have an annual report, and you know, I've heard that there's a little bit of people questioning because. People see, if you're in an industry and you see PIF invest in sports or PIF invest in something else, you think the annual report is going to tell you the bit you're interested in. But they have so many investments that they only go so granular on these reports, and they're not a listed company, obviously. They're a sovereign wealth fund. So I think you're right. There will be more. They are obviously transparent, and they do share information. But so the central...
Remember the Noon story that someone quoted that, oh, this is happening? Because PIF is also a partner in Noon.
50%. Noon was set up by Hamad Al-Abar as an e-commerce in UAE to take on Amazon, and now PIF do have 50% of that. So it is fascinating. And a lot of the stories that you're covering as well, like you mentioned last week, the Taliban, when it lists in DFM this year, that it could be worth more than the parent. And that's what we will see with some of these things. They'll spin out. Obviously, that's a different reference because it's not a sovereign wealth fund, but we will see some of these entities go public. We will see more transparency once they're public as well.
But I guess it somewhat relates to sovereign wealth funds because they also invest in a lot of IPOs. They go and invest whenever there is a company IPO. They go and invest their money in that also. They've diversified their economy from oil, and they're investing everywhere in the world. Wherever you see, you'll see some maybe subsidiary of a PIF, some subsidiary or sub-company or a sister concern of ADIA or ADIO. They're always investing somewhere. Even in startups, they have a whole fund for startups where they invest. I remember I was looking at the whole tree of ADIA. They have G42, they have Core42, they have IHC under them. So it's a very big network, and they're investing everywhere just to move from oil. That's the main idea.
It's fascinating, and you know the first story that you mentioned about Abu Dhabi, and if you know when I was growing up, and you know when you and I were entering into the workforce, we would have heard about big names and companies, and then it sort of evolved with the tech companies. And I guess if you're in the M&A in the financial world, the names that you would have heard in the past are the Goldman Sachs, the big investment banks, and things like that. And what's happening is these sovereign wealth funds are attracting the elite capital talent around the world. Like, if I'm an M&A guy and I'm in my 20s and want to prove myself, and I know there's a lot of cash being splashed around under PIF and under Mubadala and et cetera, then this attracts me, right? And it's legit. It's like, you know, they have the best of the best working for this, like, and they have the wonderful environment. You know, I was down in Abu Dhabi for the basketball, and I could see that the big stars in the US, Mark Cuban came out the other day and said that the basketball players are getting more than, making more revenue than the owners. And it reminded me, Majid, that, we covered on Love in Abu Dhabi last week that Shaquille O'Neal bought a place in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't an MOU. He wasn't told to buy it. He just came every year to NBA, and he's like, hang on a second.
This looks
What's
great.
The secret? Yeah. And that's his vintage. But what about all the others who are seeing what it's like down there? Abu Dhabi is a real attractive proposition right now, and it's only getting better. But I'm just talking about it from the intellectual capital, right, in terms of applying your trade and being involved in these deals. You know, if I knew that PIF were buying Selfridges, Aston Martin, Newcastle, all household names in the UK, Newcastle United, obviously the football club in the north, and I'm a young banker in London, and I was a young social media exec in London, cycling through the city 4 kilometres through Shoreditch down to Southwark on my bike one cold January, and the headhunter from Dubai was saying, hey, do you want a job over here? This happened to me 12 years ago. So I'm just putting myself in that picture. And like, obviously there's we talk about the US, there haven't been that many IPOs lately. There's, you know, the capital's drying up in different parts, yet it's flush in the Gulf. And it's fascinating, really, like those two kind of stories, the capital, buying Selfridges and things like that. Like, I think this is really interesting. And you guys often talk about, because I listen to the show when I'm not on it, but you often talk about the competitiveness of UAE and KSA and things like that. But this is, it's a similar strategy, right? They're both doing similar things.
Yeah. The interesting part from Rich's side was that they're everywhere. One, they're buying everything. And also, like 10 years ago, you would see big names coming from US and Europe in investing. And now, the Middle East, PIF, ADIA, they're everywhere. ADIA opened their office in India just to expand in Asia. So they're going everywhere, and they're splashing money, literally.
Yeah.
They're just
the PIF one in India is a good one. But there is a lot of money. There's a lot of investments.
Yeah.
It does seem strategic, though. And there's often criticisms of, why are you buying these brands? Why don't you make your own? But I think it's a combination because we're seeing their own brands rising. Yeah. We're seeing brands coming here. And also, what happens with this investment? You know, when you've got, if you're Abu Dhabi and you've got 1.7 trillion in investment, the profits and the interest that you're using, that you're creating, is inward investment.
Yeah.
So, you know, the public investment fund in Saudi, it stands for what?
Yeah.
So the profits that they're making isn't going into putting the tarmac on the roads of London anymore.
It's going inside, towards the development of Saudi Arabia.
Saudi's a domestic story, and people are missing this. People think people think some of these investments are for foreign influence.
Yeah.
Really, they're not. They're investments into established assets who have, generate cash and income and revenue.
Yeah.
But also, we will see in some of those new establishments and the giga projects in Saudi, we will see the Selfridges brand, obviously.
Yeah.
We will see Aston Martin racing.
Yeah.
We will see more and more football influence, and we'll see a lot of that as well. So it's quite strategic.
On your comment of inward investment, the recent report that we did on our show also, we discussed it, that the startup investment in Saudi into startups is going through local millionaires and billionaires. So locals are investing in their own startups, and obviously they're making money from all these acquisitions and everything. So you're perfectly right that they're earning money from branded things, or they're going to places which have a good financial revenue stream, and then they're taking that money and investing into their own ecosystem.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Before, and you have a nice segue, because you're talking about local investments in Saudi and startups, and it's a lovely segue, but before we jump off the Selfridges story, if anyone's interested in knowing about the sort of retail, what were the stores, the historic ones in the UK, and we kind of touched on this in a story last week, but Harrods, so the BBC have done a documentary and a podcast about Mohammed Al-Fayed, the owner of Harrods, the deceased owner of Harrods, Ala Yaramo. So he had that flagship store. And so this isn't the full history of Harrods, but it's a very interesting documentary.
Yeah.
It doesn't shed in too much light, and there's obviously two sides to every story. And, you know, he did great work in his life and invested in a lot. But if anyone's really interested in going deeper and understanding how prestigious these brands are, and I think he paid $1 billion for Harrods back in the day, in the 80s, right? So if Selfridges, I think you kind of touched on in 2021, if they were bought for $3 billion,
yeah,
and maybe I'm guessing the price is a little higher, but yeah, they might have got, if Sigma are in trouble, they might have got the 30% at a sort of
a discounted price, I would say. So Saudi, we also talk about this, that we also talk about China, that a lot of people, the West is moving away from investing in China, but the Middle East is going there because they're buying stuff for discounted prices. Mm. And then they know that they are going to make profits, but because Chinese products and brands are known for this.
Yeah,
they like will make it work.
It's like
and they're setting up a very big community in the Dubai Expo Center, the Expo City as well. So there's like nearly 30% of the companies there are now Chinese companies.
Yeah.
So they're setting up here, we're going there to invest. It's a nice symbiosis kind of a situation.
I think there was some sort of involvement in the construction of Expo City, a link with China, an MOU. I don't know the full details of it, but there's definitely a link there, and you're right to point it out.
Yeah. Let's move on to our next startup story. Ijari is a very known brand now in the startup investment. It's been only a year. They recently won Best FinTech Award at 24 FinTech in Riyadh. Rich was there at the event. They won that award, and now they've raised $14.65 million in their seed funding. And most of it came from PFG and Beko Capital.
Beko.
And with key contributions from Saeed, Alinma Pay,
Rua. Alinma, that's the well-known bank in Saudi Arabia.
So their branch, basically Alinma branch is Alinma Pay, Ruya Ventures, Vision Ventures, and Akar platform.
Mm.
Akar is also a streaming platform, I remember.
Not sure.
Yeah, so these guys, they've invested $14.65 million. The good thing is, it's a rent now, pay later.
Yeah, that term's coming up a bit, isn't it, Majid? RNPL,
And because I recently went to Saudi Arabia for the first time, so I have a lot of new memories and new things that I saw. Because
you went to Umrah,
Yeah, so as an outsider, Saudi Arabia showed me a lot of things, and I've realized that a lot of my friends who live there, they pay yearly rents. It's not like Dubai, where you have like quarterly, 3 months, 1 month, 6 months. So it's yearly rent, and this helps them, the consumer at the end, because they can now pay monthly to Ijari, and Ijari will make the full payment for the year. So it's easier for them. So
yeah.
Ijari,
so just to touch on, so obviously FinTech, the 24, so I did attend it. I'll talk about two separate things in this story. Just to touch on that event, it was fascinating. It was at the end of the summer. We felt things were hot, but no, this place was bustling. FinTech is exploding and has done in the last 3 or 4 years. It was the sort of ripe thing a few years ago. You have Tamara over there, equivalent of Tabby here. You have lots of rising stars in the FinTech world. Government, non-government, the Boots were there. There's one called Penny. There's many different brands that are there. And this was a really good event, a really kind of bustling event. And, you know, FinTech has become a sexy investor space.
Yeah.
And it's related to the sort of cashless and the unbanked region.
Yeah.
And people sort of, you know, so many areas of efficiency and commerce come with digital finance before we move into crypto and all this other Web3. But so, you mentioned they were there, and it didn't get me that they're there, because this is obviously a prop tech play.
Yeah.
And Waleed Shahabi, who used to sit on your seat, he's come on the show as the founder of Keeper.
Oh.
And it would be great to get his perspective on this, because he introduced the term through the Keeper comms of rent now, pay later, and they've raised some funding as well. But they were very UAE focused, engineering in Saudi. And this is the thing about, you mentioned earlier about, you know, the inward investment and the domestic Saudi startups. This is what's happening, is that people sort of assume that if you raise money in the UAE, your natural step into Saudi is your growth, but you can't, because they're doing the same thing. And you know what? They're doing it at a bigger scale because you can raise, look at that number, 14.6 million. Yeah. Like if we compare that in terms
Saudi
of
Saudi riyals, it's like 50 million. Yeah, so
if you compare that, you know, I don't know what, it doesn't say in the newsletter whether it's seed or series A, but if we see how much that was versus what Keeper raised, I know it looks more to me.
Yeah.
And so it just does go to show that the startup founders that I've met in Saudi, you know, the founders of the different tech companies, you know, there's one called Ninja, which no one knows of. It's a grocery delivery one. They're exploding. They're doing really, really well. There's a mental health app. There's 3 million users just in Saudi that no one knows about. In Arabic, Saudi founder, You know, and these will come out later, and people think they will have got support, but these are smart young guys who've been building for a domestic market. And they're, you know, we know the hero ones, Hunger Station, Jahaz. Some of these have already been acquired. Some of these are going public. Lots of Saudi stories, really fascinating. And then the third part of what you mentioned, Majid, is the actual problem they're trying to solve. This is a big problem.
Yeah.
You know, we move some of our we relocate people into Riyadh. We have our office, obviously, Augustus Saudia in Riyadh. And, you know, even for the people moving out of their homes and for the people moving from the Sharqiyah, the Daman Khobar area, or over from Jeddah into Riyadh, they can't get accommodation.
Oh.
And it's almost like a lock. It's almost like a bottleneck right now because demand is outreaching supply.
Oh.
And the housing ministry are amazing over there. There are lots of initiatives. They've, you know, through Russian, the big developer, they've created a lot of housing projects for first-time buyers. They support a lot with mortgages. Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff happening, but it's at a point at the moment where this is a city of 8-9 million people, and a lot of the developments are happening there, and there's a lot of you know, construction workers. There's a lot of other need for resourcing and human capital into that city at all levels. So at the moment, even, you know, we announced this week as well that STEP conference cancelled their event in Riyadh, and it's such a shame because it's a hot space right now. And, you know, I spoke to Ray Dargham, the founder of STEP conference, and, you know, he's just had a hugely successful conference in San Francisco, and they did their 10-year in Dubai, and they're coming back to Dubai in Feb. And the reasons he sort of disclosed is that two reasons. One, you know, is sadly what's happening in Lebanon, and, you know, Ray's Lebanese, and a lot of his team are still in Beirut, and, you know, that's obviously put an issue with travel and that sort of thing. But also the commercial prices and the scarcity of venues and the pricing to make it profitable in Riyadh is very hard at the moment.
Oh.
Rent is hard commercially, rent is hard non-commercial, what's that called, retail?
Yeah,
so rent is hard, and any tech solutions will really help this. So it's really exciting to see what's happening.
Yeah, the thing that you said, construction workers everywhere. My wife nearly travels every two months to Riyadh, and she's lived in Riyadh, and she's like, it's completely changed. There is nowhere to drive, there's traffic, and it's obviously because they're trying to build so much and there's so much construction work going on, especially for the expo part as well. Riyadh 2030 expo is there. So there's a lot of things happening in Riyadh, and they're trying to build it into the new Dubai, I guess. They're not focusing on Jeddah to make it the new Dubai of, like UAE has Dubai main central hub for business and everything. I guess they want to make Riyadh the go-to place.
I think you're right. In terms of this decade, I'll tell you why, because there are 13 regions in Saudi, and they have giga projects, right? Like Six Flags, Qiddiya is actually technically Riyadh. It's about 40 minutes outside. It's beautiful. Like the landscape there, the sort of mountainous landscape there, you know, it doesn't feel like a city at all. But apart from that, you've got the other giga projects, and you have, you know, the Royal Commission of Al Ula, you have NEOM, you have what's happening in Jeddah and Red Sea. Red Sea is amazing, by the way. The 23 five-star hotels, three of which are open, new airport, just about finished, fascinating. And obviously a lot of development around Medina and Mecca as well. But in Riyadh, the minister of, the finance minister of Saudi spoke on the Tamania Finjan podcast recently. And the Western media is talking about pulling back on NEOM and this sort of stuff. And he said, hang on, we've won Expo 2030 in Riyadh. We've won the bid for the World Cup 2034. Yeah. 8 of the 11 stadiums for the Saudi FIFA 2034 World Cup are in Riyadh.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the Riyadh World Cup, but it basically is.
Yeah.
So if you've got 8 of 11 stadiums plus an expo city plus Maraba, which is the Kaaba-like structure, which, you know, is in the northwest of the city, imagine, like, they are going to make Maraba the Eiffel Tower and the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
You know, we reported last week of how many domestic tourists they expect to go there.
90 billion.
No, yeah.
90 million people will visit every year. It's a very big number.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And, like, you know, you did a story as well saying, you know, around FII talking about the sphere. That'll be their own sphere.
Yeah.
And this is a thing, like, you know, Vegas have their sphere and there'll probably be more, but, like, this sort of development that's happening in Saudi, the metro is nearly done, like all this sort of stuff's happening. And they have 135 kilometer park going through called the Sports Boulevard, being built right through the middle of the city, because obviously the Riyadh Boulevard, where Riyadh season is starting, I think this week, you know, and they've Boulevard World. This is a third project that's coming, and there's a sports tower. Do not underestimate Riyadh, but your wife is right.
It's become very hectic to travel there because the roads and the infrastructure will eventually become like good for all of it, but right now it's in the construction phase, and soon, most probably in the next year or two, we'll see that Riyadh will be able to cater to more people with cars and everything.
The regulation, like I remember, you know, if people have been to Riyadh, they know, if they obviously if they watch some shows and stuff, they see the landscape of Riyadh. It's obviously different to Dubai. A part of that was by design. They technically, you know, the land department and planning permission, you apart from King Fahd Road, you actually couldn't build. You weren't allowed to build a tall building, a skyscraper, off King Fahd Road. And that's where Kingdom Tower is. That's where Al-Ula Tower, the twisty one. That, you know, the visual things of Riyadh is there. And King Abdullah Financial District is just technically off that. It kind of runs near Anas bin Malik and King Salman Road. And now, just lately, they've allowed permission to have skyscrapers there on King Salman Road as well. So the sky view of the city is going to change a lot as well.
Thank you so much, Rich, for joining us today. We've talked a lot. Usually we do it for 10 minutes, but with Rich and all the information, the tranche of information that he has, we always love to talk to him. Thank you so much for joining us. We discussed a lot of big stories, a lot of big number stories. So if you've missed anything, you can just go back to the YouTube channel and rewind it. You can go to the Smashy TV app, download it, watch the shows there. The subscription is not that expensive. You can always buy it, and you can see all the other shows that we offer on the Smashy TV app. Apart from that, we're always there on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, whatever name you can think of, we're there as Smashy Business. Thank you so much for joining us today. This was a Smashy Business production brought to you by the Augustus Media Podcast Network. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.